Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, with me, Matt Beadle, and the roving reporting, Richard Lee. We're going to get onto that in a minute, but Between the Sticks, we have a new name for the show.
I like it. Very good. Who came up with it?
A lad called Paul Kazmierczak has emailed us in, so thank you very much for that, Paul. It's a great name, and to be honest, I'm a bit gutted and concerned about the fact that we didn't really come up with that ourselves.
No, it should have been one of the more obvious ideas, but Paul's come up with it. Thank you very much, Paul.
Yeah, Between the Sticks and Top Hand was another one that came in as well, but Between the Sticks, I think, has grabbed it. But the roving reporting voice of goalkeeping, talk to me.
So yeah, recently got a little role with Sky Sports News. I've been interviewing a few goalkeepers specifically, which is nice because, of course, it fits in very nicely with this. I've had the pleasure in the last few weeks to interview Dylan Phillips, Lee Grant, and most recently Aaron Ramsdale during the week. So I went down to the Vitality Stadium and caught up with Aaron before the game against Man City. And we've got a few really good goalkeepers lined up for the next few weeks. So lots of fun.
Bumped into Asmir Begovic down
at
the Vitality.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I mean, Asmir, of course, has been on our podcast. Hopefully, we'll get Aaron on the podcast at some point soon as well, especially now doing what he's doing at Bournemouth. An incredible rise to fame after the last couple of seasons playing lower down at Chesterfield and then at Wimbledon last season, to be playing in the Premier League and to bump into Asmir, who at the moment is being frozen out to an extent at Bournemouth. But of course, fantastic career and a really, really top guy.
Yep, a top guy and someone else we hope to get on the podcast, as someone else you may interview on Sky Sports, is David De Gea. A lot of chat about him this weekend. The first ever injury time winner in the Premier League at Old Trafford.
Incredible.
Patrick Van Aanholt.
So David De Gea, it's all a bit strange for me at the moment. I know that he still hasn't signed this contract. I know that's come out in the news where it all seemed like it was done and dusted. He was going to sign huge amounts of money and what have you. Now, it comes out that it hasn't been signed as yet, which is slightly concerning for Man United fans. Obviously, hopefully that will get resolved and he will sign it. Now, he had a rough end to the last season. And something I talk about a lot when it comes to goalkeeping is building credit. Now, what I mean by this, and you can view this however you want, is that if you go 10 games without making a mistake and then you make a mistake, how often have we experienced this as a goalkeeper where people will be like, well, do you know, he hasn't made a mistake for a long period of time. Oh, it's one of those things. He saved us so many times. He was due a mistake. It's fine. But then if you then make a mistake the next game, all of a sudden it compounds that mistake you made in the previous game. Now, the problem is you don't necessarily know when the mistakes are coming. You could be training brilliantly all week, be doing everything you need to possibly do, and yet a mistake might creep in at the weekend. That's the life of a goalkeeper. Similarly, you might have had a dreadful week's training. I always remember a good example myself. I had one where I got a bout of insomnia and I couldn't sleep before a game. You can imagine going 36 hours without sleeping, playing a game, and I actually played one of the best games I've ever played. You know, luck would have it. So it's, you can't predict when mistakes are going to happen. Now, the reason I say all this is I look at David De Gea. He hasn't made mistakes for such a long period of time, and then all of a sudden he has a glut of them. So you feel now that at the moment people are looking for those mistakes. Now, this was a mistake. It was, and I hold my hands up and say that it was a mistake. However, in my opinion, the mistake that David De Gea made at the weekend was nowhere near as bad as it was being described on TV. I'm watching Soccer Saturday, and the way they're talking about it was this huge catastrophe, a dreadful error. Now, any goalkeeper watching that mistake, he could have done better, but I love an error rating. I give this a 3 or 4 out of 10. It's not a 10 out of 10 error. And the reason being, it's close range, it's struck hard. And if you look, the ball moves in slightly on him, and it's right down between his arm, between his feet. It's a horrible position to get down to at the best of times. The thing that kills him is the fact that it's on the angle. And so because it's quite a tight angle, it looks a lot worse than it is. And luck was against him, of course, hits the ground, comes back, hits him, goes in the goal, and it looks a lot worse than it is.
It's an interesting point you're making here, because I think this is where goalkeeping and goalkeeping analysis stands apart from the rest, and where it's really crucial to understand, because the majority of football fans, and I imagine some goalkeeping fans as well, would turn around to you and say, that's nonsense. He's spilled the ball. It was straight at him, for want of a better quote.
Let's say that happens straight down the middle of the goal. People will still question him because it's gone through him. And that's the quote you'll hear a lot. It's gone right through him, which it has. But then again, if you slow it down and you watch the strike, there is movement on the ball. It's dipping in towards his feet. Now, interestingly, because David De Gea, we know, loves to go with his feet. He's got caught somewhere in between where it's hands, is it feet? And in the end, he's not able to get a firm enough contact. And then you're hoping for an element of luck. That's part of goalkeeping as well. The amount of times that the ball will hit you and you pray that it goes to safety because you can't control where you parry it. Now, the speed at which the shot was taken, he's not got enough time to react to hold the ball. So you are looking to deflect it wide, hopefully for a corner, or deflect it away from goal and get something, get a firm contact on it. And he gets a firm enough contact, but again, that's where luck is against him. Hits the ground, hits him, and then goes in the goal. Now, another day, that hits the ground, hits him, goes wide. It was one of those things. So again, you then take into context the time of the game. It's a last minute. It's a last minute winner. He is at fault to an extent. So, of course, he's going to get more criticism than had that been in a 3-1 win. Like, for instance, Alisson, when he's made his mistakes, have come with victories. David De Gea is going through a period of time where he's making errors. And when he's making them, they're all proving to be costly.
Yeah, and they are seeming to be more regular. I'm a big De Gea defender, but they are seeming to be more commonplace. Now, just very quickly, what could he have done to make the save?
I mean, look, it's difficult. It's again, everyone's got different techniques. He prefers a technique where more often than not, he will go with feet. A lot of this will be based on his body weight. You know, in terms of when he's setting, is he getting the timing of his set perfectly? Is his body weight as far forward as it needs to be? When the ball is that much closer in, can you take a slightly lower stance? Can you go with your hands first and foremost and try and get a much more solid contact on it? I mean, there's so many different things that you could look at. There was another good example. I think it was Angus Gunn. Might have been the opening weekend and they lost, was it 3? And there was one that, one where you saw as he set on his heel slightly, the weight was back. And again, it kind of went through him because he wasn't set correctly. Now, it's something that we'll talk about a lot on this show. We'll talk a lot more as we move forward. The timing of your set, and it's one of the most basic things you'll learn in goalkeeping, is arguably the most important thing. Because if you get your set right, you get the timing right, you get the stance right, you get your body weight right, then it gives you the chance to explode, react, do what you need to do. In that moment, what could he have done better? Look, we're talking millimeters. That's the point. It was struck so hard, so close in. Looking at it again, the only thing I might recommend is that he gets a set slightly more forward, maybe slightly lower in his stance, knowing that it's likely, percentage-wise, to be a low shot. That might be the only thing he can do. But I say all that, another day he does exactly the same thing and he makes a save. At the moment, I feel that a lot of things are going against him. And this often happens. You know, they say about it when a team's bottom of the league and the luck goes against them. At the moment, David De Gea, I don't know if he's broken a mirror or something, but he's got a lot of things going against him.
A man in a similar position is Jack Butland. We spoke about him on the last show, and you mentioned that he might be taken out of the team. Nathan Jones has decided to do that. He left him out for the game against Leeds United, still beaten quite comprehensively were Stoke. Adam Federici came in, arguably could have come for the first goal, made some decent saves after that, but a 3-0 defeat and Jack Butland on the bench.
Yeah, look, I just think the whole situation's a mess there. I think it's been handled really poorly by the manager. And I know that he's quite new to the Stoke job. And all that being said, of course, it's going very badly. It'll be interesting to know what his position is at the moment. But I just think the whole thing has been handled dreadfully. I think that how they didn't come to an agreement in the summer for Jack, when this was Jack's opportunity to get himself back to the Premier League. So then you put yourself in the mindset of Jack. He's disappointed to still be in the Championship, getting his mind right about that. He's had a few things go against him. He's made poor decisions in games, certainly in the first game against QPR, rush of blood when he went out wide and got punished for that, against Preston when he's still on the move and the ball's crept under him, again against Preston where he dived to his left and hasn't got the connection he wanted to. So it's been mistake after mistake, which then will come back to mindset. And that's all it is. You know, I remember in my career, and it's funny how momentum takes hold, where you will go through periods of time when everything seemingly goes your way, and you sometimes get lulled into a false sense of security, thinking it's easier than it is. And then similarly, the other side, I've had 4 games in a row where I've made errors. I've gone 30 games without making an error, and then 4 in a row where I make errors. And that's, again, it will be mindset. Confidence is a funny thing, and he'll have fragile confidence at the moment. Do I think taking him out was the right idea? Probably not. You know, if you're going to stick with him, stick with him. There's so much going on there at the moment. You've got 3 unhappy goalkeepers, because of course they've got Adam Davis there as well, who helped Barnsley gain promotion. He was goalkeeper of not only the league last season, but he was goalkeeper of the EFL, Championship, League One and League Two, who is now third choice at Stoke City. It's just an absolute shambles what's going on there at the moment. Can't imagine Federici's happy either. So you've got 3 goalkeepers that are pretty unhappy at the moment, and it's too late. There's nothing they can do now.
He was on the bench. Now, I looked at that and you saw Jack Butland and the pictures that were shown of him on the bench, clearly looking very unhappy. Jack Butland shouldn't be a number 2. And some people will say, well, if he's not playing well enough, he should be a number 2. Should he? Should Nathan Jones, rather than put Jack Butland on the bench and almost humiliate him a bit, not gone and said, do you know what, Jack, just go away. Go away for a week. And I know you always go back to the Peter Schmeichel example from the 98-99 season with Manchester United, when he voluntarily took himself away, came back and was brilliant in his final 6 months at the club. But would it not have been better for Nathan Jones to have turned around to Jack and said, look, just have a break?
100%. It's absolute nonsense. You know, they're asking 25 million in the summer. I saw a story the other day, now 32 if he goes to Europe. Isn't going to happen. Certainly, I can't see it happening. How can you ask 25 million and then put him on the bench and still be asking 25 million? The problem that Jack's got now is that, as well as Jack's done, and he has done brilliantly up to a point, last couple of seasons, certainly last season, he got better as the season went on, I'd say, hasn't started particularly well this season. The problem for him is now, and he'll know this, is there's so many English goalkeepers in the Premier League. It's the best we've had for such a long period of time. I think it's seven that are starting out of the 20 teams, which is fantastic. Then you've got the likes of Daniel Bentley, started on absolute fire for Bristol City this season. You've got other English goalkeepers in the Championship that have started the season better than Jack Butland. Jack won't be in the next England squad. I'll be shocked if he's in the next England squad. So all of a sudden, there's a concern there. He was meant to be our bright hope. You know, 2-3 years ago, he was meant to be the England goalie for the next 10 years. Even in the summer before the World Cup, who's it going to be? Jack Butland, Jordan Pickford? I mean, there's no competition now. And this is where I think luck does play its part in football, that had Jack have got the right move at the right time, had he have maybe gone to one of the top four clubs when it looked like there was a possibility, he might be playing for Chelsea now. He might be playing for Man United now. And we're looking at him as England's number one. And this is where certain things have gone against him. He's going to need to muster up all the mental strength that he possibly can to get himself back to the top. And you're right. If I was the manager of Stoke City right now, I'd say to him, go away for a week, get your head right. Right, come back. You're going to play for Stoke this season. At the end of the season, you're going to move back to the Premier League, whether that's with us or without us, and come to an agreement with him so he can get his mind set, knowing that this time next year he'll be a Premier League goalkeeper once more and challenging Jordan Pickford once more.
Another man who was in a similar situation to what Jack Butland is in now is Fraser Forster. Now, he came in at the back end of last season for Southampton, having not played for a long time. I think it was Boxing Day 2017, his last appearance. He came in for a game or two towards the end of the season. They got hammered on both occasions. It might have just been one game, to be fair, 3-0. And has been frozen out, hasn't started this season. Scott Bain has got injured for Celtic north of the border. Fraser Forster has gone back to Celtic on loan.
It's a fantastic move for him because the option seemed to be closing up for him in England. You know, there was a lot of talk over the summer that he might be going on loan here, there and everywhere, but nothing happened. Of course, the window closes and you think he's going to be sat in the cold again, doing very little. And now it's extraordinary to think, because he was an England goalkeeper not so long ago. He's done brilliantly at Southampton for the majority of the time he's been there. He's really well liked by most Southampton fans. So it just shows you how quickly things can change. And it's a classic example, which every amateur goalkeeper's been through and every pro goalkeeper's been through, that at some point, someone's going to come in who doesn't like you, who's got a different opinion to the previous, and you find yourself out in the cold, which has happened. Now, I think the difference with Fraser Forster is that he will be on a very good contract there. So he's not just going to jump at the first opportunity. He's waited and waited and waited. And in fairness, he's struck gold because he has got a brilliant relationship with the Celtic fans from being there before, did excellently when he was there before. So to be able to go back there to a club in Europe, to be playing top end of the Scottish Premier League, for where he's at and where he's been, fantastic move. And to go there and get straight in the team, I'm really, really happy for him. And I really hope that we see the Fraser Forster that we saw for so long, because yeah, there's certain limitations that he has, but in terms of being a solid goalkeeper, fantastic frame on him, the amount of saves he made for Southampton, I think it was 3 years ago, he was arguably top three, top four goalkeepers in the league at that time. So for the few things he doesn't do so well, I think that for Celtic, he'll certainly gain them several points this season.
Yeah, and you talk about Jack Butland and getting in the England reckoning. Fraser Forster's another one who we can talk about if he gets back to the form. And you mentioned managers as well. He's got a great relationship with Neil Lennon. And the situation at Celtic is quite funny, not too dissimilar to what we've seen at Burnley recently, because you've got Craig Gordon, you've got Scott Bain, and now you've got Fraser Forster. Scott Bain out with a hand injury. He's going to be out for around 2 or 3 months, but he made an error in the game against Motherwell earlier on in the campaign. They won that 5-2, by the way. Craig Gordon then came back in for a League Cup game and a European game. And if you're Craig Gordon, you're probably thinking, here you go, I've got another run in the team here. But Lennon goes out and gets Forster.
Yeah, it will be interesting, as you say. It won't necessarily be too much of an issue right now, because it'll be a straight fight between Forster and Gordon. It seems, obviously, that Forster's got the nod there. But you're right, when Scott Bain is fit again, then you'll have exactly the same situation that Burnley had. look, I'm sure they'll deal with it. They've got enough games where they'll mix and match from time to time with the Cup games, with the Europa League as well. So I'm sure that it won't be too much of an issue for them. But now, going back to Fraser Forster, you mentioned about the England reckoning. That's an interesting one for me, because I think, I suppose one of the criticisms of Fraser Forster is that he is very solid in terms of his actual goalkeeping. He is of a similar era to myself, to Joe Hart, to whoever else it might be, where distribution wasn't a huge thing when he was younger. For him to get back in the England squad, that will be the biggest thing for him. Can he show that he can play out from the back like a Jordan Pickford? I don't know if he necessarily will be able to do that. I think from Fraser Forster's point of view, for now, it'll be firmly establishing himself back at the top end of the SPL. And then if it is a case of coming back to the Premier League at some point and establishing himself again, those will be where his goals will be.
Just a quick analysis of his performance. He had one moment where he came out from his box, gave away a foul, got a yellow card. You'd say maybe a bit of ring rust, I suppose, on that occasion. But he did save a penalty. Mm. They scored the rebound. An interesting point on this, and I want to know if this has ever happened to you, whereby he then was obviously frustrated and tried to launch the ball out and did one of those classic things where he launched it, but it hit the angle of post and bar and almost came straight back at him. And he tried to style it out and go, yeah, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. Has that ever happened to you where you've been frustrated and you've wanted to launch it and you've either hit it at a defender, you've hit the opposing striker, or it's come back at you, you've mishit it?
I did. There was one, it's a bit of a famous one. So when we played against Charlton and I made three penalty saves and it was on Sky. But after the third one, I was buzzing, as you can imagine. The ball's free, so I've just gone to smash it. And I've done it and I've landed really awkwardly. And you can see, it looks like I've pulled my hamstring. And I did. I felt a little twinge in my hamstring as I've done it. And I then had to style it out with a little jog afterwards. So do you know what? If you get a chance, you might want to put that out on Twitter the moment I kicked that third one away and nearly pulled my hamstring, yeah.
That is going straight away on at GK Union.
Absolutely. In terms of his performance, just a quick analysis, I'll tell you two things I'll touch on, or two similarities that I saw. Adrian, Fraser Forster, rush of blood. Fraser Forster, you mentioned, came out the angle. Very similar to Adrian, where for those that saw the game, ball came over the top. Van Dijk's got control of it. Really, Adrian should just drop off. But you see, it's that excitement. It is ring rust. It's not playing for a long period of time, reading situations. And that's always the most difficult thing. If you haven't played for a year or so and you're suddenly in a pressurized environment, thousands of fans watching you, you have to make a real cool, calm decision. It's been so long since you played a game of football. It takes goalkeepers several games. In the same way that it takes an outfield player several games, it takes goalkeepers several games often to get themselves back in the swing of it.
Sticking with penalties, the game between West Brom and Derby at the weekend, Sam Johnstone facing two penalties from Martin Waghorn. The first Waghorn scored, the second Johnstone saved.
Yeah, he did, and credit to Sam Johnstone, because ordinarily, rule of thumb, if the first one scored, ordinarily, I think percentages will back me up on this, is that they normally go the same way, the strikers. Of course, they've had success going a certain way, so they'll often follow what they do the first time round. However, Waghorn did completely change what he did. And by the way, fantastic save. The speed, agility, power that he's shown to get down right into the bottom corner, because it's a good penalty, was superb. They showed the replay and he was marginally off his line, which I don't want to get into a debate on VAR, because I know how angry you get about VAR. But interestingly, I really hope they figure out the rules when it comes to penalties long term, because look, it was a brilliant save. For me, absolutely nothing wrong with it. Yes, he was an inch or two off his line, but I think the point is that if we're going to make goalkeepers be cemented on their line, then it makes penalties pointless, because every single one will be scored. That's a great example of where he's taken half a step, exploded down to his left, technically excellent, gets a strong hand to it, puts it wide, and in the end it saved him a point.
So that rule of thumb, it's interesting, because when you look down the years, I mean, the ones that stick out for me, Eric Cantona, 1994 FA Cup final up against Dimitri Karine, put them both in exactly the same spot. Another one I think of is Martin Palermo, Argentinian striker, 1999 Copa America. He missed three in a game against Colombia. So penalties are a game of cat and mouse anyway, but when you get more than one, it's tricky. It's all about that mindset, about that psychology.
It is. It depends on the taker as well. And this is, you're right, there's so many different parts to this where as a goalkeeper, you've got to put yourself in the mind of the taker. Now, if you're coming up against Lyle Taylor is a good example at the moment for anyone that's watched Charlton, he'll walk up to the ball and he waits for the goalkeeper to move and he puts it in the other corner. Heide Helgesen used to be brilliant at it. I think Cantona did it to an extent as well. That, for me, if you've got that penalty in the locker as a striker, it's almost impossible for a goalkeeper to save it. But you give yourself a chance by not moving until the ball's struck. Now, of course, they should score, because if you don't move until the ball's on its way, then it's so hard to react and save it. Now, that's one type of penalty. If you're coming up against a 6'4" centre-half who's just going to step up and smash it, your decision might be that I'm going to stay down the middle. And if it's their second penalty, again, I'm going to stay down the middle. If you're coming up against a tricky winger who is likely to come across himself and has a really angled run-up. So again, it's all these things that will play on your mind when you're facing a penalty. And you've just got to put yourself in their mind. What are they likely to do? Are they clever? Are they going to try and paninka me? Are they going to try and whip it back across themselves? All these different questions. How have they placed the ball? Have they put the mitre sign facing one of the corners? It'll be things you wouldn't even necessarily think are a big thing. But if you can read them, then once you've made your decision, you go all out. Now, that's what Sam Johnson's done. You can see he's made his decision. He's gone early. Perfect decision and a great execution.
Rightly and wrongly.
Got a feeling we might disagree on this one, my friend, because Timu Pukki's goal against Chelsea at the weekend, Kepa came out on the angle. Now, for me, this type of goal I look at and it drives me mad, because I think that the striker hasn't had to do much. He's basically just hit a routine shot, if I can say that, towards Kepa. Kepa's got a hand to it. He's got his right hand and then it's bobbled into the goal. But Timu Pukki hasn't, apart from run onto the ball and make a good run and then get it on target, he hasn't had to do anything out of the ordinary to beat Kepa.
So I think there's two parts to this, and actually I think we might agree to an extent, because I think that you've either got a decision of coming or staying, and he's decided to approach the ball and try and make a block. Now, if you were to pause at the moment of impact, I think the majority of his body is actually covering outside of the near post. I think he's got his angles ever so slightly wrong, so there's not enough of his body covering the goal, which in the end makes it a reasonably simple strike for Pukki. I think the other side of it is, I think the decision was probably to stay. This is where I give Adrian a bit of credit for his performance. As much as I've mentioned a rush of blood once where I think he made the wrong decision, he made the right decision in terms of staying several times and making the striker make up their mind. Now, imagine Kepa stays and he's pretty much on his near post. He's got the right angle. Now, that's a tough finish from where Pukki is. Realistically, he's going to have to give the goalkeeper a chance, because it's such a tight angle that Kepa, providing his reactions are good enough, will likely make the save. But this is where it's interesting. You know, we spoke earlier about the David De Gea one and how that was a bad error. Now, David De Gea actually made the right decision in terms of he stayed and possibly should make the save. Kepa doesn't get blamed, despite a similar situation in terms of where the ball is struck, and he obviously approached it, but because he was committed, it doesn't look as much of an error. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting one for me. So look, I think we agree to an extent. I personally think Kepa should have stayed. However, if you come, you have to get your angles right. You have to get your barrier right and make sure that your body is covering the goal. And I think if you were to pause it at a point of impact, I think he's ever so slightly off.
Okay, so no particular answer there. You're both rightly and wrongly.
I guess I am.
Okay, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I've sat on the fence. I've got splinters.
Okay, well, that's it for another week, Richard.
Fantastic.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, for another week, in association with GK Icon, in association with Goalkeepers 365, and in association with Love Sport Radio. We'll be back next week.